Thank you for that $40 introduction, George. I'll give you the money after the meeting. I want to thank Milton and the committee for inviting me down here this weekend. We were down here last year, my wife and I, and health prevented her from coming today. But she sent her love, wished you all well, and so hoped to have been here with us this weekend, but she just can't do it. But she asked me to come down, bring her love to you, and bring your love back. That's kind of the way this fellowship works, you know. We're all kind of tied together by that little string of some sort. I am Ray Bryan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
But I wasn't really all that bad. And my sobriety date is 10/22/84. I did not intend that to be my sobriety date. I intended that it would be my last day on this earth. Things change, and thank God for that. And maybe not all prayers are answered, because I was praying to die. And when I got sober, I found out my wife was praying the same prayer. Things weren't looking good. They really weren't. I was born and raised in the Boot Hill, Missouri. Coming out of the Depression and going into World War II then. In our part of the country, no one had anything, so there wasn't a feeling of superior or less than. Everybody was broke equally. We've never known when times were good, and as a result, didn't know it when times got bad. I went to school there, high school, elementary school, raised in a good Baptist home, and it would seem like maybe that's not the best place to raise kids. When you come to AA and start looking, seemed like the Baptists and the Catholics, and we all kind of break out about the same percentage-wise. I was an average student, maybe a little above, decent athlete, never got into any trouble. Never drank in school, had never heard of drugs of any sort. But that was to change. On graduation, I went to the University of Missouri. That's a Yankee team that's playing Ole Miss right now. And I started drinking. I drank just a little after football season, my senior year of high school. When I got to Mizzou, Playboy magazine came out about the same time, and they raided all of the party schools, and Missouri was not even rated. We had lost our amateur status, considered professionals. I didn't know anything about drinking, really. But I remember the first weekend that a bunch of us went out. They all got drunk. Poor drinkers. Sorry, drinkers. and I had to help him back to the dormitory. And about the second or third weekend of that, I thought I had found my calling. You know, a lot of people feel that they're called to the ministry or this or that, or they want to be an engineer. And it looked like drinking was my profession. That was the one thing I'd found that I could excel at. I did not know at that time that this was an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Seemed like I drink and drink and drink and never get drunk. But it became an inconvenience because I started having a hard time making it to class. I'd moved off campus with some other fellows, and we'd drive into town for class. Some of them have to go to class early, and I might not have a class till 10, 11 o'clock. So what are you going to do? Go to Stein Club and have a beer or two and wait time to go to school. And that became a habit or a necessity. I don't, however you want to term that, it happened. The drinking progressed. University invited me to not come back, but it took them 3 years to get around to it, and I still have a letter at home in my dresser that my dad wrote to the university, to the dean of admissions. And he told the dean that I was a good boy, which all parents do, you know, they'll take up for their kids. And that I was getting ready to marry a sweet Christian lady. And he was sure that my attendance and my grades would be better. I had just fallen into a bad crowd up there. Well, I was the ringleader of the bad crowd. But they let me come back. I did get married. Carol Ann and I got married in August of 58. And we've been married 55 years now. And that is one of the largest miracles that I have in my life. My sponsor always told me that alcoholics are the luckiest people on earth. We get women that will put up with us, and carry us, and stay with us. Unless we make that fatal mistake. You know, a lot of times they tell us to leave, and some of us get up and go. I didn't do that. I was told to leave a lot of times, but I knew if I left, I'd play hell getting back in. So I stayed, you know. If you go to a strange place and you come in drunk, you're going to fall over the furniture and kill yourself. We went back to school after our marriage, and sure enough, things didn't get better. The progression of alcoholism went on. And about halfway through my senior year, I just couldn't do it anymore. I dropped out of school. Carol Ann was working at the university. She was secretary in the athletic department, working with Sparky Stalkup, and that was the 1 year we had Frank Broyles, this football coach at Mizzou, and then he bailed out and went to Arkansas. I went to work selling cars for Dodge Plymouth dealer up there. My dad had been in the automobile business, was in the automobile business. He'd started off as a bookkeeper after he graduated high school, first member of his family to graduate high school, and then went to a business school and kept books for auto dealership and bought in. And he had just bought the Lincoln Mercury dealership in Papa Bluff. I dropped out. Carol Ann got pregnant, so we moved back home. You know, alcoholics may not be too smart, but we're smart enough to go back to where we can live. I knew we couldn't make it up there. We came back home, and I went to work in the dealership as sales manager, and vice president of the corporation. Got involved in civic affairs, elected president of the JCs, later board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce, exalted ruler of the Elks Lodge, meeting all the right people, doing all the right things, it looked like. But you know, things aren't always as they seem. My drinking progressed. I was really into that. You know, we hear a lot of people in AA say, fake it till you make it. I faked it for about 27 years and I never could make it. That is a program that won't work. I could not be what I appeared to be. I was having a terrible time, terrible time. In 84, we had three boys that were grown. I hadn't seen them grow up. I was either working or drinking, but when I made it home at night, the kids were already in bed. And they were still in bed when I left the next morning. You know, when you come in late at night and they ask where you been, you can't answer that question because you know you're going to hear the same question the next morning and the answers aren't going to match. So I'd get up early and leave. I wasn't going to stay for that second test if I could help it. There I was, kids grown. I'd missed it. But the thing that really disturbed me, I tried time and again to stop drinking. I'd been to family doctor, been treated by psychiatrists, psychologists, talked to the preacher. I'd been raised in the church. Tried teaching Sunday school with a hangover. That doesn't work. Seemed like alcohol kept interfering. But you know, somewhere in the book it says something about this seeming the only normal life. We can now imagine life either with or without it. I was treated for depression. No one ever at any time suggested I was an alcoholic. They did suggest I drank too much. And maybe instead of four or five drinks an evening, well, I ought to cut it in half, maybe just have two or three. Well, when you're drinking two quarts a day and you cut it to one, you haven't gained much ground. You just haven't. And I was so tired of hurting the people I loved, hurting my parents, my wife, my kids, the shame and the guilt. I wanted everyone to see me in the daytime, going to the Chamber of Commerce, going to the bank, going here, going there, driving a big new car. Looked like a success, and I was an absolute failure. When you know inside you're a failure, try to act like a success on the outside, there's nothing that can relieve you of the shame and the guilt and the remorse. It got to the point I no longer wanted to live. I didn't want to live. I prayed to die. And I finally decided that I was going to have to figure out some way to blow my head off and make it look heroic and not jeopardize the insurance. And some of you may be smarter than me, but I couldn't figure out how to do that. I just couldn't figure it out. I went to the office, cleaned all of my personal effects out, laid at home for 3 days. I wouldn't answer the door, the telephone. Blinds were closed. That third day, which would be 10/24/85/84, my wife and my father broke into the bedroom. They'd talked to a doctor that I went to school with, grown up with, and he'd made arrangements for me to go to a treatment center in St. Louis. I didn't know what a treatment center was. I'd never heard of one. They told me it was a weekend deal, you know, just going for a couple of days. We know what they're talking about. They start that 26-day deal and all that, and I, whoa, wait a minute, I ain't signing up for that. I was real leery in the first place. On the way up there, I kept thinking, there's no one in St. Louis that knows anything that can help me. There might be some doctor in Russia or somewhere that's figured out some new wrinkle. I'd already tried everything I knew to try, and everything I'd heard of, everything that had been suggested to me. None of it worked. I'd stopped drinking for 5 months one time, taking antabuse. It doesn't make any sense to me. They say that if you take that and you drink on it, it'll make you sick. Well, hell, we know about being sick, you know. They can't scare us into anything. After 5 months, life was getting worse rather than better. And I went back to drinking. Drank for another 2 or 3 years, 4. Anyway, I get to this treatment center, and oh, you talk about we had a knockdown dragout. They're talking about me detoxing, putting my pajamas on and all this. And that was the last straw. I said, Carol Ann, come on, we're going home. And this little intake deal telling Carol Ann, you don't have to listen to that. Don't let him talk to you that way. I said, wait a minute, Buster. I'm the one with the insurance policy and the keys to the car, and I'm going home. If she wants to go with me, she better listen. And we got in the car and left. Got about 4 or 5 miles down the road, and it was not an intervention from another human being. I've never seen one of those interventions work. But there was an intervention of some sort from whatever God there may be. I turned that car around and went back to where I had just left after making a complete ass of myself. Everyone in the building had heard it all. People on staff were scared. They didn't want me staying there with them. They've got everybody running around in pajamas and or maybe khakis and t-shirt. There I am with a suit and tie. I'd wore a suit and tie all my life. We went back, and in the time that we had left and returned, the MD on staff came in, gave me a physical, and told them to let me go ahead into general population, that I didn't have to go through detox. I said, well, I'll try it. We'll see what this is about. And about 2 or 3 hours later, everybody sitting in the lounge area started getting up, and I said, where are y'all going? They were going to an outside AA meeting. And I said, I'm going with you. I'm not staying here by myself. This was the beginning of a real miracle for me. The first night in treatment, I went to an outside AA meeting. Not knowing what I was doing, not even knowing what a treatment center was. Never heard of one. I had heard of AA. And I'd heard people make jokes about having to go to those old meetings. I went to that meeting. It was a birthday meeting, a much smaller crowd than this. And there was a hippie with biker with hair down to his ass. Levi's ripped about half off, and a t-shirt that looked like it had been through the Civil War. And he was talking about being sober for a year. And he was enjoying it. He was tickled to death. I could not imagine anyone going a year without a drink and being happy about it. That didn't register. But after he made his little birthday deal, probably a 15-minute lead, and they started around the room sharing a little. And I'm listening to them, and they're saying the strangest things I ever heard in my life. They're talking about a physical compulsion, mental obsession, spiritual malady. It bombarded me with all sorts of things that I couldn't understand. But they talked a little bit about how they drank, and they sounded like me on the drinking part. But when they started talking about the disease of alcoholism and the recovery part, I couldn't understand any of it. I could relate enough to their drinking problem that when it got around to me, for the first time in my life, and I hadn't even thought about it, I don't know where this came from, I said, I'm Ray and I'm an alcoholic. And there was an old feller sitting across the table from me. Wasn't near as old as Milton or George, but... But this fellow was old, and he leaned across and just very gently told me to shut up. He said, you don't know what you're pleading guilty to. Take this book, read the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, more about alcoholism, and then, if you think you're an alcoholic, come to the table and say so. I've had a lot of people say, well, if I went to an AA meeting and they talked to me like that and they did this, you know how people, how we are. We're telling somebody else talk to me like that, I wouldn't tolerate it. It was the thing that saved my life. And he was right. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. Knew nothing about it. But I read those chapters that he told me to. And I had no trouble at all coming to that next meeting and saying I was an alcoholic. I have not had to take a drink since that time, nor have I wanted a drink. After reading that, looking at the steps, I had enough to get me through the 26 days of treatment, however many it was, I don't know. I said, well, I'll try it. We'll see what this is about. And about 2 or 3 hours later, everybody sitting in the lounge area started getting up, and I said, where y'all going? They were going to an outside AA meeting. And I said, I'm going with you. I'm not staying here by myself. This was the beginning of a real miracle for me. The first night in treatment, I went to an outside AA meeting, not knowing what I was doing, not even knowing what a treatment center was. Never heard of one. I had heard of AA, and I'd heard people make jokes about having to go to those old meetings. I went to that meeting. It was a birthday meeting, a much smaller crowd than this. And there was a hippie with biker with hair down to his ass, Levi's ripped about half off, and a t-shirt that looked like it had been through the Civil War. And he was talking about being sober for a year. And he was enjoying it. He was tickled to death. I could not imagine anyone going a year without a drink and being happy about it. That didn't register. But after he made his little birthday deal, probably a 15-minute lead, and they started around the room, sharing a little. And I'm listening to them, and they're saying the strangest things I ever heard in my life. They're talking about a physical compulsion, mental obsession, a spiritual malady. They're bombarding me with all sorts of things that I couldn't understand. But they talked a little bit about how they drank, and they sounded like me on the drinking part. But when they started talking about the disease of alcoholism and the recovery part, I couldn't understand any of it. I could relate enough to their drinking problem that when it got around to me, for the first time in my life, and I hadn't even thought about it. I don't know where this came from. I said, I'm Ray, and I'm an alcoholic. And there was an old feller sitting across the table from me. Wasn't near as old as Milton or George, but this fellow was old. And he leaned across and just very gently told me to shut up. He said, you don't know what you're pleading guilty to. take this book, read the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, more about alcoholism, and then, if you think you're an alcoholic, come to the table and say so. I've had a lot of people say, well, if I went to an AA meeting and they talked to me like that and they did this, you know how we are. We're telling somebody else talked to me like that, I wouldn't tolerate it. It was the thing that saved my life. And he was right. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. Knew nothing about it. But I read those chapters that he told me to. And I had no trouble at all coming to that next meeting and saying I was an alcoholic. I have not had to take a drink since that time, nor have I wanted a drink. After reading that, looking at the steps, I had enough to get me through the 26 days of treatment, however many it was, I don't know. I don't know how to turn my will and life over. It's making an altar call and saying, you believe, go, my child, and sin no more. If I could do that, I wouldn't need AA. AA told me I'd never have to drink again. If that was all you had to offer me, I would not be here. Not drinking had never, ever been good. Unless you, the complete psychic change that the steps promise. A new way of living. I couldn't stop drinking. But I could learn how to live a different way. I could change my negative thinking to positive. That's what this deal is all about. The fourth step, I was told, is where AA begins. The first part, we're kind of scraping away the scales of ignorance and fear and shame and a lot of other things from our eyes. Y'all gave me some hope. And I was told that hope means helping open people's eyes. For the first time in years, I had that moment of clarity. I could see what my life had been, how I'd been living, and I couldn't deny it. I'd always denied it before or justified it. There is absolutely no way that I could justify doing the wrong thing after I looked at this book and these steps. I didn't hear anything about 90 meetings in 90 days. That came later. Treatment centers were just beginning. The fourth and fifth step, getting honest with another human being. And there's nothing fearful about it. So many people are scared of it. It says we're just looking at what in the devil is wrong with you and becoming willing to turn loose of it. I couldn't stop lying, cheating, and stealing. I couldn't quit being fearful. But I could begin to be patient, and tolerant, and kind, and loving, and caring. If I'd turn loose of these things, God would take them, and I could grasp new things and keep moving forward. And I wasn't very long about getting through these steps. I don't know how people make it a step a month or going 5, 6, 8, 10 months and still working on a third step when there's nothing to work on. Either I wanted to live or I wanted to die. Of course, a lot of times we say, well, I got to think about that. But I didn't have to think about it very long. I wanted to live, if I could. And you told me I could. All I had to do was ask God to take care of this stuff. I didn't have anything to get rid of. I just had to take my hands off of it and go on and live. So many times we keep fighting, trying to get rid of this, trying to stop this, trying to stop it, rather than moving on and living. Doing a 10th, 11th, and 12th step on a daily basis. You heard Tony say last night, how long do you have to wait before you ask God for help? We better start today. I had very similar experience to what Bill had, or a similar experience to what Fred had on over in the book, where he said, the moment I made the decision to go through the process, the drink problem seemed to have been removed, as it later proved to be. That decision to go through this process and allow a higher power to guide and direct and show me how to live one day at a time, reconciling the past, putting it behind me. All I had to do is live today. I could live one day at a time. And I enjoyed it. I had some things that shaped my attitude toward AA and life in general. I was 2 months sober and went to my first conference in Saxton, Five Corners. We were holding it in December at that time. That spring, I was at Eureka Springs, Arkansas, springtime in the Ozarks. Joe and Charlie were doing a big book deal, big book study, and I listened to them, and it shaped my attitude toward the steps, toward the process, not the process of quitting anything, but the process of beginning a new life. That same weekend, Father Hillary from down at Coleman, Alabama, was speaking, and by his own admission, he was powerful. Catholic priest, and he had his collar on. He said, I walk in the Catholic Church and the ground shakes. He said, I've got all the jewels and the walking stain and all this stuff. He said, I come to AA and I'm nothing but a GD drunk. That gave me permission to forget a lot of the things that I had been taught and heard in churches younger. Used to hear in a lot of churches, if the girls drink or smoke or dance or wear shorts, they're going to hell. And if that was right, I was going with them. You can bet on that. I didn't want them to go by themselves. But I learned how to live according to some principles that meant something. That's what spirituality is. Living by a set of religious principles where we don't have to drink, where we're rid of fear, remorse, guilt. and we can be of service to our fellow man. It's my understanding that's the only reason we were put here. To help one another. There's one thing that I was cautioned about in that fourth step. And I try to do this with new people that I work with. When we're taking the sixth and seventh step, be sure that I'm willing to turn loose of all of this. Be sure I'm not trying to hang on to something. That by no mental reservation or secret evasion, I was willing to have God have it all. I didn't want him to take all of it except this little tiny matter over here that I could take care of by myself, you know. I wasn't even going to tell God about that, as if he didn't know. It's one of the important things about having a sponsor. If I haven't been honest with him, I haven't been honest with me or with God. It's a safety check there. Have I told him everything? If I have, I'm being honest with me. I was kind of hustled into service work pretty quick, I guess. I got my first sponsee when I was about 5 months sober. He's still sober today. I got my second sponsee about the same time. A lady, she's still sober today. I'm really not sure that I sponsored any of them because I did not tell them what to do. I tried to show them what I had done, what had been suggested to me. And they could take those steps. They could read as good as I could. Take them and see what happens. And they've turned out them, and I turned out me. And we're entirely different. No, none of us alike. Always had that fear that if I took the steps, I'd be like somebody that I didn't like, you know. I learned that I can love everyone in AA and still have some that I don't particularly like. But that's okay too. I still love them. I've got my first big book, third edition big book, at home in my bookcase. And it's marked and checked. And when the fourth edition came out, I got a new book. So that I and the newcomer were reading the same book on the same page. And of course, I started marking it up just like I had my original book. And I got to thinking, this ain't right. I was limiting my own thinking by having a book and looking at it, and I underlined, oh yeah, that means so-and-so. Yeah, that I understand. And I was limiting my thinking. And I put that book up. And I get a new book every 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months. Because my own underlining and my own thoughts from 3 months ago will affect my thinking today. And it prevents growth. I've got to look at each day new, each day different, and try to keep an open mind always. I can't tell you what page anything is on in this book. An alcoholic can call me in the middle of the night with a problem. I can tell him to read page so-and-so. I don't have any idea at all what's on there. But he's going to think I'm a genius. Because it's, I promise you, it's going to say just exactly what he needs to hear. He needs to hear something besides himself. That's all he needs to hear. But when I'm talking one-on-one with him, I don't tell him anything. Let them do the talking, I do the listening. Until finally they hear what they're saying. If they don't hear it, well, I can point it out to them. I could have taken their fourth step. All they had to do is fill in the names. But until we see it ourselves and hear it ourselves, it's of no meaning. Going to those first conferences put the hook in me. I wasn't trying to stop drinking. I hear people brag about I haven't had a drink in so many years. I know when my last drink was, but it has really not a lot of meaning to me. I haven't had a drink today. That's the important thing. Length of time does not impress any of us. It's are we living it? Are we demonstrating? Are we talking the talk or walking the walk? Heard Tony and Kitty both talk about that this weekend. We're going to hear John talk about it in the morning. I already know what he's going to say. He's going to say, by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, he hadn't had to take a drink today. Any more than that is really kind of meaningless. You know, there's one thing that I do want to remember. I was our group up there was formed in 1946, registered with New York. It has met continuously since that time. And it has been literature-based. We have a big book study every Monday night. I go to another big book study every Tuesday night. Mike has a big book study over at Dexter on Friday nights. I like to go to that when I can. The solution to all my problems is in here. In 1958, Bill Wilson said, sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps, is the sole purpose of an AA group. We've tried other activities and always failed. If we stick to these principles, we will be all right. If we try to do anything different, we will surely collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. This is that singleness of purpose. That singleness of purpose. And the newcomer, I feel, shouldn't be a newcomer. Talk to him just like I was talked to at that first meeting. He may come in and say he's an addict. That's what he's in jail for, selling drugs. But what happens to him when he drinks? We so often say, well, you need to go to NA. If we spend a few minutes with them, you know, they could even be a Democrat as far as I'm concerned. I wouldn't hold that against him. But he should have the opportunity to find out what he is. I didn't know what I was when I got here. And y'all didn't know what you were when you got here. We need to talk to them.
go through the doctor's opinion, Bill's story. Let them decide from this for themselves. All they know is what someone told them out there. A lot of times we take them, want to take them to a treatment center. If they're not going into the DTs, we can take them to AA. That way we don't have to unteach them. 90 meetings in 90 days, just don't drink, go to meetings, and all that stuff. There's no program there. If they've got the disease, we've got the solution right here. Right here in this book. I'm about to get into a sermon right now. And I know I'm preaching to the choir. So I'm not going to do it. But the next time you have a chance to share, preach to the choir just a little bit. Because, you know, sometimes they go to sleep. We get a little lax, and we forget what we're there for. Everything is going great. I haven't had a drink. Life's wonderful. If life's so wonderful, we need to be out showing it. We've got a good group, an active district, an active area up there. And when I look at the things that I'm doing to try to carry the message, it is woefully inadequate. Woefully inadequate. I know I could do better. I don't have to find God. Just have to keep searching. And he makes not too hard terms on us. As long as I don't try to define him. I have no idea what God is. But I know this. No human being could have relieved my alcoholism. I was drunk, and now I'm sober. I wanted to die and I want to live. Carol Ann wants to live and wishes she could be here to share with you. She couldn't. But she still sends her best to you, wishes you well, and I'm going to take your well wishes back to her. May God bless and keep us. Thank you.